This program is brought to you by Mobilecast Media, helping customers increase sales and productivity through high-quality online video and podcasting.
John Houghton here with New Media Currents at Dreamforce. We're talking with Steve Woods. He's the CTO of Eloqua. How are you doing, Steve?
Doing well. It's great to be chatting with you, John.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us. So we're just talking, as you know, in this program, we're trying to cover what's working, what's not working within marketing. The landscape is changing so quickly, and so many new tools are coming out. Facebook, Twitter, some of these things work for some companies, some of these things don't. And so we're just asking people what works, what doesn't, and you have a lot of insight in the area. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit about Eloqua and what you guys do.
Sure. So we're a marketing automation software provider. We help our clients run their marketing campaigns and then understand the buyer's interest. Who's interested? What are they interested in? And are they interested enough that it makes sense for a salesperson to get in touch with them? We track what we call their digital body language, which is the aggregate of all of their online behavior, to give you as a marketer a sense of that interest profile. And from there, based on that digital body language, let you cater the campaigns, so you deliver messages that are relevant, that are interesting, that are timely, align marketing and sales, so the leads that you're sending over are leads who are actually interested in having a conversation with sales, and then analyze the effectiveness of your campaign so you can understand the effect that your marketing investments are having on moving buyers through each stage of that buying process. We provide the software that does that.
That's excellent, and it seems very relevant because right now, like for example, for my company, Mobilecast Media, we have a website and Apache server, and I'm kind of a techie, so I look at the logs, and it's kind of tedious. You can see the IP address, you can see the page they clicked on, you can see the keywords that they came in on, and so you're taking that to the next level, and you're not even really working off the logs. Are you working off an urchin, or what's that called? That it's probably something you put into the web page, and it feeds back to the server. What is that, and how does it work? And it takes things about 20 times greater than the level that I am at, and which is where I'm at, where I'm looking at the raw logs.
Sure. So what we do is we track website behavior in the same way that Google Analytics or Web Trends or Omniture would, with two lines of JavaScript. And from there, you get a profile of all of that online behavior, what a person does on your website, where they go, what they look at, and also where they come in from. So if they come into your website based on a Google search, you can see what that search is. If they're referred into one of your blog articles based on a tweet on Twitter, you can see that. You can understand what drove people into your site. And then when they're on your site and you're interacting with them from a marketing perspective, you can see what marketing they're responding to and what they're not. If you send them an email, did they open it? Did they click on it? Did they forward it? If they come to your website, come to a landing page and want to register for an event or download a white paper, you can see that they filled out that form. So all of that information gives you that insight into who they are as a buyer and how interested they are. And wrapped together, you get some very interesting insights into each person's propensity to buy and pain points.
And so that helps convert the traffic more effectively that comes to the website, and to know who to follow up on and who to call, where to invest your energy. Because obviously a lot of leads could come through a website, and this helps the sales rep sort of prioritize the time.
Absolutely. I don't think anyone on the sell side or the buy side wants a mistimed sales call. Nobody likes to receive that call from a salesperson saying, do you want to buy my stuff, when you're not ready to buy. Salespeople are a very critical part of the process. They're very useful because they can help a buyer understand service level agreements, contract terms, pricing, packaging, exactly what they need. But you don't want to engage with sales too early. So by understanding that online behavior, that digital body language, you're able to understand when a person is ready to engage with sales. And you do that through lead scoring. So look at that digital body language and map it against a scoring routine to say, what am I interested in looking at? And from there, you score your leads and understand who's ready to purchase. And only the leads that are at the top of that stack engage with the sales team. Everyone else who's not yet ready to purchase, well, they're in an earlier stage of their buying process. So they can be nurtured over time you can use marketing campaigns to keep them excited, keep them interested, educate them as a buyer until such time as they are an active buyer and are ready to purchase. So you're able to split that population into ready to buy, which goes over to sales, and not ready to buy, which is nurtured over time.
That makes sense. Now, getting back into general marketing, I think I want to come back to nurturing, too, because there's some specifics there, and you might have some practices. And even backing up further from that, did you recently publish a book, and can you tell us what that is?
Yes, I did. It's called Digital Body Language, and it's really talking about this change in the buyer that we've been talking about today, what today's new buyers are like in terms of the way that they acquire information, and how we as marketers can adjust how we market to guide the buying process that they're now going through. So the book's available on Amazon. It's been doing amazingly well, and it's been a fun year getting out on the road promoting it.
Excellent. So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, and if you could think of an order, maybe just for generalized companies, and it's a little bit hard to generalize, but what would be like the top five investments these days, and the marketing landscape's changing so quickly, but what would be the top five activities a company could use, maybe even traditional and digital? Do you have such a list in your mind, and if you could quickly go through?
Yes and no. So the way that we look at it and the way that we guide our clients to look at it is understanding the buyer's buying process. And every organization has a slightly different buying process that their buyers go through. But really, you've got three main phases to it. There's the awareness and education phase, where someone understands what problem it is that your segment of the industry is trying to solve. The next phase is on vendor discovery. So understanding who's that long list. If I now understand that there's a pain that I can solve, who are the 10 vendors that I need to look into in that space to see how they are going to solve my pain? And then the third phase, again, very generalized, is solution validation. So I've now picked one or two, and I need to understand whether this vendor can actually solve my pain in a way that's economical and relevant and works for my business. So with those three phases, a marketer's job is to guide that buying process. And to your question, the media types and marketing vehicles that they select really go into how they guide buyers through those phases. So some media types are very relevant for general awareness. These are the larger campaigns that are more mass media. Some marketing types are a lot more relevant for that discovery phase, being available on search, having nurturing campaigns going so you're top of mind, getting into the discussions and the conversations that are happening in social media and on blogs, and having educational vehicles like podcasts and videocasts. And then at the validation phase, being able through those marketing processes to insert the right message into a buyer's mind so that when they make a decision, they're using decision criteria that is relevant for the solution that you provide in the market. So it really comes down to understanding that buyer and understanding where your challenges are as an organization in guiding buyers through that process, and then picking the marketing vehicles accordingly.
So then let me ask you, for Eloqua, what has been most relevant as a marketing vehicle, and where do you guys invest most of your time and money?
Sure. So in terms of those three phases, we really have all three that we're investing in. The solution that we provide is not one that's generally understood and known in the market like CRM would be. Marketing automation still requires a little bit of education and awareness. So we're doing a lot of more mass market programs that way. We do a lot of email, we do a lot of event sponsorships, trade shows, things like that, to get the general word out, speaking tours, webinars. The decision criteria in our space is also not well understood. So we educate the market on how to think about an investment in marketing automation. We do a lot of case studies and white papers. We're very active in social media. We do a lot of blogging. We're active on Twitter and on LinkedIn discussions to educate and get that market out, or that awareness out. And in the middle of the funnel, we do a lot of work around discoverability. So when somebody decides that they need to score their leads, they need to put a lead management process in place, they need to find marketing automation, we work to make sure that we're discoverable through natural search, through paid search, through social bookmarking in the various venues that the potential buyer would go to find a solution like ours.
So with regard to social bookmarking, you're talking about Dig, you're talking about Delicious?
Yes, Dig, Delicious are the main ones that we see.
Has that delivered an ROI for the time you've invested in that?
It's an interesting question. Generally, what we look at is, are the media vehicles that we're using driving raw traffic numbers? Are they driving activity? And from there, is the activity that they're driving part of buying processes that eventually result in deals? If you're dealing with a long buying cycle, you can often end up, though, with 20, 30, 40, 50 different marketing touch points before a deal closes. So you end up doing quite a bit of work to understand the influence of each touch point in that process and then attribute the revenue accordingly. We're taking a very experimental approach right now. We are mapping and modeling that revenue attribution. We are seeing some good results there, but we're not being religious about only doing things that clearly have proven ROI in social media because it is such a nascent space. So we come back a lot of times to, are we seeing the earlier stage tactical metrics? Are we seeing traffic from natural search or for paid search or from social bookmarking or from blog commentary actually driving just raw traffic numbers to our site? And those give us the leading indicators on whether we will see revenue down the road, which we're also watching, but we're not reacting to as quickly.
Do you have any predictions about paid search? In other words, paying Google AdWords versus natural search, meaning making sure your page has a proper keywords in it and you have inbound links that have authority. Do you have any predictions about which is going to win out and which is going to be stronger in a larger market?
You know, I don't see the current model changing dramatically in the near term. I think there's really two approaches to it. One of them, natural search, is a longer, slower, more resource-intensive process. You need to adopt a publisher mindset, create a lot of content, join the conversation, make a lot of relationships so you get a lot of links to your content, and over time, make your way up the natural rankings. It's a much more raw dollar cost-effective investment, but it takes a lot of time, and the results that you see are slow. Paid search allows you to write a check and bypass that whole process, which has a lot of merit. Oftentimes, you need to drive results very quickly and just can't wait for the natural search process that you'd put in place to show its effect. So I think work in both of those will remain the healthy paradigm for the foreseeable future, next few years.
What about for long-term ROI? Some say that natural search might be a big upfront investment, but at least it maintains its status within search engines until it is no longer relevant versus paid search. The day you stop it, that's the day it stops.
I'm a big believer in natural search. I do agree with you on that. Not just because of natural search and its ability to drive raw revenue, but if you look at what it takes to become good at natural search, as a marketer, you need to adopt a publisher mindset. And that change in mindset drives so many beneficial effects for you as a marketing organization. You're creating a lot of content. You're establishing thought leadership and expertise. Yes, you're also being more discoverable in search, but you're also engaging and giving people a lot of topics to engage around in the general social conversation. So the benefits of the publisher mindset that you need to do well in natural search have incredible returns to them. So I think, yes, if I had to give one piece of advice to a marketing organization, it would be to adopt that publisher mindset that will get you the natural search rankings you desire.
And that obviously will drive a lot of benefits. Getting to lead nurturing, a lot of what you do with your software allows you to drive lead nurturing. Are there any techniques there that have been effective for a company? I mean, maybe even talking about your own marketing, since it's hard to talk about a generalized company. What is effective there with lead nurturing, and what is the process for you guys?
Sure. Lead nurturing is a really interesting topic. I always look at lead nurturing as the art of maintaining permission to stay in front of your potential buyers. It's not about driving them through a process. It's about maintaining their acceptance of your messaging. We've all got to the point with emails that we have a set of emails that we receive every day and we reflexively delete. You recognize the sender, you recognize the subject, and you just delete that. You've emotionally unsubscribed at that point as a viewer, and the marketer has lost your attention. They've lost permission to stay in front of you with their messaging. Lead nurturing is about maintaining that permission. So in terms of advice, what you've got to do is keep it interesting. Keep it topical, keep it relevant, and give people something that they actually care about enough that when they see your next communication, they think, you know what, I'm going to look at this. Sometimes it has something interesting. So whether it's using humor to do that, we've done some campaigns that had an interactive game show style, one that we won a Forrester Groundswell Award for recently. It was called The Conversation, and it was a game show style interaction, and people loved it, and they talked about it, and they forwarded it on Twitter. It used humor. You can use case studies and data to stay relevant. If you give people stuff that isn't salesy and isn't promotional, you give people information that they are interested in coming back to, you're able to maintain that permission to stay in front of them. And that's really the art of lead nurturing.
Getting down to tactics, is there any specific formula, or maybe there isn't, about how often you should be emailing and maybe, sounds like, sending articles and white papers and videos and things? Any certain frequency that is good, maybe once a week?
There's no magic number. I think a lot of marketers are looking for that magic number. What you've got to do is bucket your audience into, let's say, three different categories: highly engaged, medium engaged, and not engaged with you at all. And that's based on their likelihood to open your emails, click on your emails, visit your website, submit your forms. That's their engagement. That's how much they care about your message. Those that are highly engaged, they're interested in you, and you can provide them a little bit more information, a bit more invites to various events. Those that are medium engaged are in the middle, and those that are not engaged with you very much at all, those people you have to be very sensitive to. You haven't connected with them emotionally yet. So frequency of communication with those people should be kept very low, and the value of each piece of communication should be kept very high. You don't want to lose them, and you do want to find an opportunity to gain their attention. So you've really got to split it out by those buckets of their response to you.
It's interesting what you say about emotional connection. Do you find that even for a technology product that an emotional connection is made, and how does that manifest itself?
Sure. I think a lot of business-to-business marketers are hesitant to do anything fun and entertaining. They think that because the product they sell is not implicitly interesting, they should therefore keep their marketing really boring. And I think that's wrong. The message has to tie, but you don't have to be extremely boring about it. We worked with Roche Pharmaceuticals, for example, and they had some equipment that dealt with cell toxicity analysis. Not a very exciting topic, but what they did was they realized that they had an interesting opportunity there because they're talking about cell death. They got this 1980s hairband death metal style group to do a video and called it the Cell Death Tour. And it tied to their message. It was hilariously funny. And the scientists that they were going after had all lived through the 80s. They were in sort of the 28 to 45-year-old group. And this became their number one generator of actual leads from scientists for their medical equipment. So you don't have to shy away from being creative and being funny if you're a B2B marketer selling a product that it's inherently not that fun. You just have to be more creative around how the message that you're using ties creatively to the message around your product.
Sounds good. John Houghton here with Steve Wood, CTO of Eloqua. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, John. It's been a pleasure.